So we go on. I can say this on the basis of my own life experiences. You can go on for years trying to activate, organize welfare recipients to defend their rights. And then miraculously, in 1965-66, an effort that was so painstaking and yielded such slim responses, everybody's ready, and they don't need you to do it either. And the same thing was true in the great workers' strikes of the 1930s. I recall a story that Irving Bernstein told in his history of the Great Depression. It had to do with a communication received by John L. Lewis, the head of the mine workers, from one of his field organizers. And the organizer said, "Oh, I organized 9 locals on Tuesday." Well, I mean, that same organizer, I promise you, hadn't organized 9 locals in the previous decade. So in a sense, the organizer didn't organize the locals. The mine workers were ready to organize because they felt, A, they had numerous grievances, but they'd always had grievances. What was changed is that a new administration was in power that they thought would restrain the uses of violence to put their organizing down, to crush their organizing. And they also thought that, that there was a kind of wind at their back from other workers. So the time is sometimes right. You never know. You have to keep trying. What I say will not make much of a difference. What you say will not make much of a difference when people don't already half know it or three-quarters know it from their own experience. And I think a lot of university people are now beginning to recognize the crisis that confronts the university as a result of cuts in public funding. You've got a public university. What proportion of your budget is actually paid for by the state?
Less than 20. Yeah.
How much?
Less than 20.
Less than 20. Well, it could be different, because I come from a public university too, and 50% of the funds of my public university are still public funds, so you didn't fight hard enough. So it's the cutbacks in public funds, increasing student debt, it's MOOCs, it's online learning, it's the reliance on a slave labor force called adjuncts. You know what's happening to the university. The people who work in the university know as well. They never know exactly how to predict, and you won't learn the answer to this from reading social movement scholarship either, how to predict when somehow the concatenation of events makes people ready.
Can I put your narrative of the rise and continuing fall of the welfare state in an international context? Communism, which wasn't mentioned in the 1930s, of course, people discussed the capitalism for producing a world war plus a major depression, and intellectuals in vast numbers were converting to communism because Stalin's Russia apparently was feeding everybody, housing everybody, etc. When people became aware of Stalinist atrocity, that immediately discredited, perhaps permanently, any alternative to capitalism today. There is only capitalism, and people given a choice between capitalism and communism would think of Stalinism as communism and therefore say no way. Is that one continuing force, do you think, for the weakness of resistance to modern capitalism? One of the reasons why, for example, Occupy was so very, very hesitant about any kind of affiliation with a national political movement?
Well, I think it's one of the reasons for the weakness and divisions among the left, for sure, historically especially. But note also that among the young, surveys indicate that socialism is a credible alternative. And I don't think Occupy was particularly influenced by the history of communism or Stalinism or the red baiting of Stalinism or communism. I think it was more influenced by the oligarchical character of past left organizations like unions and political parties, for example. And they did say they had a political philosophy. It was not communism. It was not socialism. It was anarchism. Mm-hmm. And in that, it was Occupy was part of a series of movements that began in the 1960s that have tried to create a different road to transformation. I mean, I think it's incomplete and so forth. I have no problems with it, but that also has certain virtues, certain attractiveness. And the different road to transformation is a road that emphasizes horizontal organizations, participatory democracy, and direct action. So that was true of SNCC. It was true of the Clamshell Alliance. It was true of the Global Justice Movement. And if we don't pay attention to those currents of affection, both affection and discontent, in among the youth, I don't think we'll connect with them.
Do we have time for one more?
Sure.
I just want to offer a contrast between my generation and current generation with regard to college. We talked about future earnings, all the debt and college loans that college graduates will have to pay off for the rest of their lives. Compared to my generation, matter of fact, most of my college education was right here in this building, back in the late 60s and early 70s. But in those days, we still had the industrial base here in Canada. There were jobs, thousands of jobs. So what we did, we would go up to college, and we would come back during the summer, work at Camel Soup, RCA, or wherever, and we would could earn enough money just during the summer to pay for our next year's college tuition. Mm-hmm. So as a result, when we graduated, we were debt-free because our college was a pay-as-you-go college education.
And tuition was a lot cheaper.
It was a lot cheaper, exactly. But compared with today now, unfortunately, I'm paying off a college loan as a grandfather for my grandson, who I co-signed for. You know, he graduated college, difficulty finding a job, so of course they go to the co-sign, you know, to pay off the loan. So I'm paying off one of his loans two generations later. That I never had any debt. Mm-hmm. Never had any debt. But that's the difference between two generations. Mm-hmm. From my generation to current.
Mm-hmm. Want to comment on that?
No, you're right. Yeah. What else is there
right.
to say?
Well,
I remember what I said about student debt being a way of mortgaging, taking away the salaries, the earnings of future generations.
Well, everybody here would love to continue this for a long time, but we can't do that because you have other obligations, I know. So would all of you join me in thanking you?
I want to say something. You know, I love Rutgers Camden, but I don't know if I would be here as often as I've been here lately if it wasn't that Lori Minniti is my colleague and my very valued friend, and I want to thank her for inviting me.
Right now going to our class. We have a class on poverty in the urban environment, so hopefully we're going to continue the discussion with many of the students who are here down there. And I would invite others. I didn't ask my students that. There are a few seats, but I'm sure they wouldn't mind if you want to continue. the discussion.
Probably haven't that more in the past.
Back to the organizers back here. The three of us are all organized.
He's got the